Edge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. It's Chris Graham, and today the guest is Rod Mullins, and we got a lot to talk about. Rod's got Bristol Motor Speedway action this weekend coming up in NASCAR. We'll get you there here in a few minutes after we review this past weekend. But Rod, first, before we even get into reviewing last weekend, Kevin Harvick's second win of the season at Michigan this past weekend, just tell me about your excitement with Bristol on the horizon.
Well, I think the big thing with Bristol just on the horizon, Michigan just set the stage for these next three races before we get into the playoffs. And Michigan had all of these different things going on with it that, you know, kind of just even pushes the mood even more for greater, I guess, urgency for some of these drivers as they go into Bristol this coming week. And, you know, I think right off the bat, what stands out with me is Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson had a very bad race at Michigan, ended up finishing, I believe, last place is what he ended up finishing. But, you know, he is right now on the outside looking in. He may not make the playoffs. And even though they made a crew chief change, and they thought that crew chief change would probably help them along the line, I think it's now just ended up it's become nothing but worse for Jimmy Johnson. So now you're going to have to, if you're the veteran like he is, he's going to have to just drive the wheels off that car, and almost literally he's going to knock people out of the way so he can at least get a good finish. And he's going to do it in such a way that he can get in the playoffs or at least try to inch closer to one of those playoff spots. But, you know, it's only being separated right now. The points chase of getting in those final spots there in the top 16, only separated by single digits, some even one, maybe even two, maybe 5 points. And, you know, Ryan Newman is looking at the first playoff for Roush Fenway Racing since 2006. So, you know, they have been sitting there for 13 years in the number six car. They've not made the playoffs. And Ryan Newman has got them poised. But you go to Bristol, you have bad luck, and you're not able to go and regroup after Bristol. That could very well hurt you going into the playoff at the cutoff date, especially after Richmond, Darlington, and when they go to the Brickyard. That's where it's going to be vital that some of these teams have to really step up.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about Jimmy Johnson since you went into some detail there. Three of his last five races finished 30th or worse. You mentioned this past weekend. He started the race in Michigan. He would have been in the playoffs if the season was ending before that race started. And now, of course, he's back on the outside looking in. He's not missed the playoffs since the inception in 2004. He's been in every playoff. He's a seven-time champion. I've probably asked you this every week or some version of this every week, Rod, but what is it Is it age? Is it, you know, something with the team? I mean, what is going on with Jimmy Johnson that he is in this predicament right now?
I think it's got a lot to do. I don't think it's got to do with age. I think he can still drive a race car. I don't have any doubts about that. I think it's the team, the preparation, and maybe what some of the Hendrick teams share amongst each other. Chad Knaus had been there for so long, and he took Jimmy Johnson, and, you know, he made him the driver that he was. And, you know, he's still sitting there at seven championships, and he's wanting that eighth championship. But a lot of people really ask the question, why do you go and move Chad Knaus over to William Byron? But I kind of saw it this way. William Byron has really done well this year. He hasn't picked up any wins, but Chad Knaus's experience is what has helped out William Byron stay in front of the pack. And then some of that other information that he shared between some of the drivers, Alex Bowman, for example, there with Chase Elliott, and then also with William Byron. Those three drivers right there, they're the youth movement in that Hendrick Motorsports team. And maybe, just maybe, it might be the age factor to a certain degree. Maybe Jimmy is at this point right now of, if I can just hang on here just a little bit longer, but, you know, Ally signed a multi-year contract with Hendrick Motorsports, and they're banking heavily on Jimmy Johnson. Now, is it the team? Is it what they've got? Is it just how they're organized? Each one of these teams are sort of separate altogether. Some of them will share information back and forth, but they're all kind of separate inside the Hendrick Motorsports stable. And Jimmy Johnson, you know, when they were driving for Lowe's, they pretty much shared everything with everybody else. Now, here's the situation of where you've got these other three teams sharing with Jimmy Johnson, and maybe the driving style, or at least what Chase Elliott picks up, William Byron or Alex Bowman picks up, doesn't jive with a Jimmy Johnson. And so there may be some sort of age thing in there. I think he can still drive the car, but I think it's just the mentality right now of that young versus old situation. By all means, right now, Jimmy Johnson is the oldest driver in the Hendrick stable. And will he stay there? Well, he's got a couple more years to go, maybe a year or two, I think, is what he's got left to go. And Jimmy Johnson's going to have to be looking at what the big picture is going to be for it's over with. And I think that's vital for him right now.
In the here and now, let our listeners know what's Johnson's recent history at Bristol. What does it suggest that he might have where he might finish this weekend?
Johnson has ran good at Bristol, but here in the last 4 or 5 years, he's not had a lot of success. He has run at the near the front, but then has managed to be caught up in some wrecks. We just have to say, more than anything else, it's been a track that has been dominated by Busch, and we're not talking Busch here. We're talking Kyle Busch, and then last year in the fall race, Kurt Busch won the big race there. Yeah, Kurt, the year before, had a sweep that weekend. Took three races, took the truck race, took the Xfinity race, and then took the Cup race. Johnson's just not had as much success here in, say, all the last 5 or 7 years. Probably about 5 or 7 years is what he's just not had that amount of success there at that track. He's ran good, but he's not been able to seal the deal. And so that kind of continues to point downward for Johnson unless some big miracle peeks through the clouds in Thunder Valley on Saturday night.
You talked about Ryan Newman a couple of minutes ago. You had a nice feature story as part of your previews of Bristol this weekend on Ryan Newman. You mentioned that as it stands right now, he's 15th in the points. He'd be in the playoffs. He'd be the first Roush Fenway driver since 2006, which is just amazing to think, to make the playoffs. So talk about Ryan Newman, how he's gotten to the stage, and maybe what his prospects are for the weekend.
Well, Ryan Newman's been one of those situations, sort of like Jimmy Johnson. A lot of people were wondering, did Ryan Newman still have a lot of driving potential still in him? He's kind of bounced around. Of course, he had been with Penske Racing there for a while. Then he left Penske, and then he drove a little while for Tony Stewart. And then after he left Tony Stewart, he ended up going to Richard Childress. But then this past year, he ends up going to Roush Fenway Racing. And a lot of people said, this is probably going to be the twilight of his career. He's going to probably finish up maybe with about a year or two contract, maybe 3 years, and stay there, and that'll be the end of it. But this year, he has really just got a lot of people's attention, and he's the only Roush Fenway driver besides Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Those are the only two right now, but they're the only ones that's really in any kind of playoff contention. But Newman is in a better position than what Stenhouse
is. We mentioned earlier in the podcast and haven't said much about him since, but last weekend's winner, Kevin Harvick, second win of the season. Talk about Kevin, that win for him last weekend, and then let's look ahead for him at Bristol coming up this weekend.
Well, I'm not going to kind of rub it in and say that I told you so, but I thought fuel mileage would probably be a big factor in this race, and for a lot of the drivers, it was a big deal. Kevin Harvick had enough gas to make it the rest of the way, but he drove conservatively, but at the same time, he drove with a mission. And then we talked about Jimmy Johnson finishing there at the dead end of the pack. Jimmy Johnson had all sorts of trouble and had a tire go down, slammed the wall. That pretty much did end his day right there. But, Kyle Busch he tried to be a factor in it. But, this was kind of the reawakening of Stewart Haas, so to speak. And Kevin Harvick had been winless, but, he's picked up his second race or second win here of the season. He had been pretty much winless up until, just a couple of weeks ago, or maybe about a month or two ago, he'd been winless. And then he comes up with a big win in Michigan on the fuel mileage, and, he was doing all of that, the driving on Sunday, with a bad arm, a bad shoulder that he messed up playing golf, playing golf is what he told people, but actually it was throwing a Nerf football to his son Keelan. And so the bad shoulder, the bad arm, it kind of caused him a little bit of problems, but he was able to kind of overpower and drive through the pain and kind of wave that big win on Sunday. And then, of all things, Keelan runs out on the track. They put him into the car, and he starts doing donuts. and burnouts right there on the track. And Keelan just had a whale of a day himself, and he's very much involved in his dad's racing organization and also with what he does with Stuart Haas. So it was a great day for Kevin Harvick, not only as a driver but also as a father, because he had a chance to grow with Keelan, his young little boy.
What else can we look for this weekend? What are the other storylines? As you mentioned, we're so close to the playoffs. We've got three races left in the regular season. So what else can we look forward to this weekend?
Well, of course, the Gander Mountain Outdoor Camping Series that they're going to have down in the truck race. They'll have that on Thursday night. They'll also have the K&M East Series race, and some big news there. Callie Deegan, who is one of the talk of the women drivers right now in NASCAR, she will be driving a car. She'll be driving, I believe, a Toyota on Thursday night after the truck race. And this Gander Mountain Series truck series race tomorrow night at Bristol is the start of the truck series playoff. So there's a lot on the line there. There's going to be a lot of jockeying for position and that win. Ross Chastain has come out, and he's been a factor in a lot of these races. So we're just going to have to see where that plays out. The Xfinity race coming up this weekend, it's one of those of where you just don't know who's going to win. Kyle Busch is supposed to be in contention. He's supposed to be racing a truck race. He's supposed to be also maybe racing in the Xfinity race this coming Friday night there at Bristol. So you'll have to see how that goes. Been some interesting races so far in the Xfinity series, but really on Saturday night, I think the storyline is going to be, here they come. Will Kyle Busch, will Kurt Busch, who's going to end up winning a race and winning this race and continuing this streak, so to speak, at Bristol? And there's a lot of people that says you got to give at least a nudge so much to Kyle Busch, because Kyle Busch just loves the Bristol. But then you also have other drivers. Chase Elliott right now. Chase Elliott, he didn't finish maybe toward the top five like he was hoping to at Michigan this past weekend. But he's looking for a redemption, so to speak, at Bristol. He loves Bristol. He wants to drive and drive a darn good race at Bristol, and he wants to pull off a big win. And I can't really rule him out at this point. Chase Elliott, he gets a good car underneath him, and he's able to qualify well and stay out ahead of the pack, and all the other wrecks going on, we could see a Chase Elliott dominated race. And it could come down to him and Busch possibly fighting for the position. But more so than anything else, I believe we're going to see, to me, a lot of showmanship and a lot of entertainment value this weekend, because this is the 20th anniversary of the famous Terry Labonte-Dale Earnhardt clash. And that's when Dale Earnhardt went underneath Terry Labonte, turned him around there as he's coming down the front stretch, puts Terry Labonte, just hits him, puts him into the wall, and then Earnhardt comes around, ends up winning the race, goes to victory lane. And he's heard the biggest amount of boos are heard there at the last Coliseum than anybody else has ever heard in their lifetime, more than Kyle Busch. But they booed him so bad that night. And Dale Earnhardt's excuse was, I only meant to just rattle him up a little bit, just shake him up a little bit as he went around the turn. And, you know, Terry Labonte, still to this day, they asked him down at the Hall of Fame here a couple of weeks ago, have you gotten this episode out of your mind and stuff? And he said, you know, Dale Earnhardt's gone, but he said, this is something you never get out of your mind. He says, I had a chance to win that race outright and to come across the start-finish line, and Dale Earnhardt takes me out. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Next question. That's pretty much the way that Terry Labonte treated him. So we're going to see that, and we may see that kind of racing, especially in the Monster Energy Cup race on Saturday night.
So now I've got to ask you, you've got us ready for the race. I want to know what your weekend's going to be like. You're, on pit road, in the garage, in the media center, victory lane. I mean, what is it like covering a race? I've covered a race. It's been a few years. I've only covered one. You're a veteran of this. You do this all the time. But take our listeners into what it's like, what you're going to be doing this weekend.
It's a lot of footwork at the early part of the day and everything. For me, on Saturday is going to be the most busiest time, because there's going to be a lot of preparation going on, but there's also some downside. You're going to have some drivers that's going to kind of be mingling in and out. You're going to have some car owners mingling in and out. It's a chance to kind of talk with them a little bit and maybe get an idea of, you know, what's going on with the team and what's going on there. But, you know, a lot of these drivers really get focused, and you won't see some of them for the rest of the – you won't see a lot of them for the rest of the day whatsoever. If you see them in the morning, you won't see them after maybe 12 or 1 o'clock, and it's not because of, you know, previous commitments and things like that. They're trying to get themselves ready, so to speak, and psych themselves out to get ready for Bristol because, you know, the comparison has been made once before, like flying a jet engine or a jet plane through a gymnasium. That's essentially what it's like at Bristol. And so you're trying to psych yourself out. Playing, you know, driving in that race and it being nighttime, there's a whole new aura to it whatsoever. You don't see the sparks during the daytime. Sometimes you may see them depending on, you know, give or take the lighting conditions, but at night, the sparks come out. I mean, you see the sparks. You see the cars bobbing out. For me, it's going to be constantly there for about the first 100 or so laps. I'll either be outside in one of the turns trying to catch some of the action as they come through the turns with photography or video, and then I'll be heading into the media center, and I'll mostly be, you know, keeping up through the stats and through the scoreboard and everything that they have there at the media center. And they always do a great job there at Bristol Motor Speedway of, you know, keeping us fed and then also at the same time providing information to us that we need. And I think one of the best things about Bristol Motor Speedway and Speedway Motorsports tracks for that matter is the way that they give us the accessibility to some of the drivers, some of the car owners. And when they bring them in at the end of the race, you know, I'll be there. I'll be reporting either comments or, you know, the post-race comments and things like that. And then it's pretty much putting this stuff to paper and trying to get it ready and putting it on the computer and then getting it sent out. Probably at least about, if the race ends at, say, 11 o'clock or close to 11 o'clock, I may not get out of the media center until about 12:30, 1 o'clock or something in the morning. But I'll have already had that story filed, and I'll be sending pictures to you or video to you, whatever the case may be. But it's a busy time.
It is, and I'll be up late as well just to make sure that everybody gets to have access to this. For our listeners out there, as we get towards the weekend, Ron's already put a couple of stories up. We've already posted on the Augusta Free Press website a couple preview stories. I'm sure we'll have some more coming up for the rest of the week. Then just follow the weekend. Ron's going to be busy all weekend. Augusta Free Press. Also, Ron's Twitter. You know, Ron's Twitter is a great follow to be able to keep up with, well, you know, just in general, auto racing and what's going on, but then specifically this weekend. So, Ron, get rested up. Get yourself psyched up for a busy, busy weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be busy, and we'll try to keep everybody informed and entertained as to what's going on down at the Last Great Coliseum.